1 Corinthians 13, lesson 4, page 3. If you'll turn there with me, I think we're on verse...
We're right at the top.
Yes, biblical hope is a firm assurance, a certain expectation, rather than just finger crossing or leg crossing, right? So what hope did we have before we were Christians? What hope did we have?
Our own.
Luck, chance, or coincidence, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Murphy's Law, right? That something bad happened, it's going to keep happening, right? All of that. But we have a stronger hope now. We have real hope now, and that hope is in the fact that God's truth never fails. Boom. Now, you can fill all the things in your life into that one little category, God's truth never fails. That means that if I'm having a problem at home, if I'm having a problem at work, if I'm having an internal problem staying on track, God's promises never fail. They give you the strength that you need to deal with any event in life, absolutely any event in life, and especially when it comes to hope. Says biblical hope is a firm assurance, an expectation rather than just finger crossing. What does that mean? And we just prayed it. We look forward to what you have for us. What is the expectation you have from God, for God? Yesterday, today, whatever. Yeah.
That He'll keep the promises.
You expect that. Yeah. Now, what do you mean when you say you expect that?
That I trust.
Trust, right? Somebody else. What do you expect from God?
Protection.
Deliverance.
Yeah.
And protection. He's a refuge, right?
Yep.
What does it mean that He's a refuge? What does that mean?
We can go to Him.
We can go to Him. What does Psalm 91 start off with, Wendy?
He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty.
That is a refuge. And how do we abide in the shadow of the Most High? How do we do that?
By His Word.
Yeah. Okay, how though?
Reading it, studying it.
Okay, that's part of it.
Prayer.
Holding it.
And doing it.
Doing it. That's the key. That is the key. In other words, the book, this is a lifesaver. The case for the lifesaver and the actual life-saving events and a refuge and a deliverance and all the other things that come from taking it out in trusting that it's going to float you through life and applying it to your life. Otherwise, it's just a book. It's just a carton that's carrying the truth. You have to take it out and you have to apply it and that is the whole purpose of it. Yeah.
Past experiences too, you know, He was there before and you know He'll be there again.
Exactly. That's hope. Yeah.
Hope? No, that's, you know it's gonna happen. That's not a hope.
Well, it's
hope is a guarantee.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That He's coming.
To me, hope is like Jesus.
Yeah. No, that's carnal hope.
Right.
Yeah, that's carnal hope. But biblical hope is the promises are there and they're gonna happen.
Right.
Period. Right? So let me ask you, so why is it that we don't expect more from God? Why is it, I just want to finish it. Why is it that we have two default modes? What are they?
Spiritual and carnal.
Spiritual attitude and carnal attitude. Those are the two default. There's no third. There's no neutral. That's an illusion. You're either for them or against them. Simple, right? So why do we fluctuate so much? And why is not the spiritual attitude the most used default mode?
The most used default mode is we're still living in this fleshly body and in this fleshly world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not in the book, if you're not amongst believers, it's very easy to get sucked right back into that.
Exactly right. What else? She's right.
Which means we're not completely regenerated.
Nope.
We're not. That's what she's saying, right? We're not completely regenerated, right? Everybody understands what that means, right? Our soul, our mind has been regenerated. We have the spirit of Christ, the mind of Christ, and our spirit has been regenerated. Ephesians 2:1 says that you were dead in trespasses and sin. But the body, the flesh, and the flesh is what? What do we talk about the flesh? We talk about it. What is it? Well, how would you describe it if somebody came up to you and said, what do you mean the flesh? What would you tell them?
Our will. Our earthly enemy.
I don't know that it would be a will. You have
our will, our flesh. Driven by our will, isn't it?
Your what?
Is our flesh, what our flesh be desires, or driven by our will?
No, the flesh is the vehicle, okay? That's all that it is. But it has a specific meaning. Who knows what it is? The flesh. See, it's an interesting, we talk about the flesh all the time, but it's hard to sometimes figure out, well, what does that mean exactly, right?
Is it the part of us that doesn't have the spirit?
No, you're indwelt with the spirit, right?
Yeah. Living with a negative attitude?
That is it, yeah.
Well, I would tell them it's our natural attitude prior to receiving the spirit of God.
So okay.
Been taught up until this point.
Well, they'd say to you, well, you got the spirit of God, right? Didn't you lose the attitude,
yeah.
Right? What is it? Think about it. What is it? The flesh is a choice. You have to remember something. You have a choice every day when you wake up to do. How many times have you done that? How many times have you just felt, you know, I have God in my life all day, and man, what a wonderful day I had, right? That's a choice. If sometimes you wake up with the right attitude, everything is going the way it should be, and even if it's not, you're still comfortable with it. That's a choice. When things happen in your life, first of all, who put them there? Right, God, and He did it for what? To work out for your good, to conform you, conform you to the image of Christ, and in doing that, there has to be something you rub against. You have to rub against something. And weight, what do you do when you lift weights? You're taking those muscles and you're stretching them and ripping them. There's always has to be an action against something in order for growth.
A resistance,
that's the word I was looking for. There's a resistance. And the flesh is what God kept in us as a resistance to giving us a new spirit, a new heart, a malleable heart, and the mind of Christ. So now we have a choice. Did Adam and Eve have a choice? Yeah, they had a choice, right? So in a sense, you could look at this the same way. You could say to yourself, Adam and Eve were perfect, unlike us. God created them and they were perfect, and they made a choice to disobey Him. We have been made perfect spiritually. 2 Corinthians 5:21. What's it say? He made Him to be sin. That we might be the righteousness of God. So that means in a spiritual sense, you are the righteousness of God in Christ. Right? And you, and I mentioned before in 2 Corinthians 2:16. We have the mind of Christ. So that takes part. We have three parts: body, soul, and spirit. The soul is the mind of Christ, and the spirit has been regenerated, renewed. And in doing that, the only thing that's left is the flesh. That is the part of you. Here it comes. That is the lower part of you. Human beings have two parts as well. A higher part, the higher part of each and every individual is their spiritual part, and the lower part is their flesh. Before you were saved, you were always on the lower part. There was no high part in your life. That's why you were never satisfied. That's why there were always holes in your life. That's why you were never content. All of those things were there because you were living in the lower valley of life. But when you got saved, what happened? Wow, I'm joined ears with Christ. I'm going to heaven. Hell is taken out of the picture. The lake of fire is taken out of the picture. I have a refuge. I have strength. I have discernment and understanding. That's the higher part.
And you learn it as you go along.
And every day. Nope, every day. You learn something new, right? So my point to you is that the flesh is the vehicle God has allowed in our lives to cause resistance, and that resistance is how we grow. Everybody understand? And the power for the spirit and for the mind, what is the power? What is the power of everything in your religion? What is it? It's, don't say God.
Faith and trust.
No.
Attitude.
No. I'm saying no, really, because that's, we've talked about this 7,000 times.
Attitude.
All the power that you have in Christ is love. Boom. Nothing. There's nothing in the Bible that has more power in it than love. And what's the proof?
The cross.
The cross. That is that, that cross is a symbol of the greatest love that mankind could ever know on this side. And on the other side, it's also the symbol of God's greatest hate, sin. You see the two? Love. And that's what we're studying. So when we say biblical hope is a firm assurance, we're saying, based on everything we just heard, that's why it's, that's why we have a hope, a guarantee in our hearts that God will do what he says he's going to do because of who he is and what he's already done and the way we live our life now. I can't tell you how many people through the years have come up and said, you know, my life's a wreck. I've been a Christian for 10 years. My life's a wreck. My marriage is on the rocks. My kids are running ragged, the whole nine yards. And I said, well, do you know why? I don't know why. Maybe the devil's in it. I said, well, maybe he is. But who's your worst enemy? Me. Well, maybe that's the problem. Me. And maybe what you need to do is you need to get a little less of me and more of him, and then watch what happens. And let me give you some verses to take home and talk to your wife about. The people I'm having in, that I have in mind were both saved. And you guys talk about those verses. Meditate on those verses. Then let's get together and talk. Within a period of 2 weeks, they were back. They were back that everything was good. There was no negativity in it. And it was simply because this book gave them the hope they need. They trusted in this book as believing Christians, and their life got back on track. That's the kind of hope that, that the Bible talks about. Now, why is it that we don't have testimonies every day? Can you say I have a testimony about what God has done in my life every day? And let me ask another question before that. Should we be able to say that? Should we be able to say I have a testimony every day of what God has done?
Yes.
Should we?
Yes.
But do we? That's the question. And see, what that does is that gives you the scale of where your biblical attitude is and where your carnal attitude is. The more biblical you are, the more testimonies you'll have. And I'm not talking about parting the Red Sea. I'm talking about just seeing God in your life, just seeing him in your life every day. Looking, last night, we were doing something. We had a little fire in the backyard, a fire pit. And we looked, we were going up the stairs to my deck, and Wen said, look at the sky. And underneath the sky was dark on top, but there was this beautiful pink thing that just lined the bottom of it. And from the angle of the stairs that we were on, all I could think of was, why did he do that for me?
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Uh-huh. You know what I see on Wednesday night when I leave the box to
get on my feet? Yeah. Yep.
You almost got to pull over.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Makes you worship,
but see, that is how you stay in that zone, in that spiritual zone, by putting God in. By somebody said to me, "Did you see?" Or I asked the question, "How many people here saw Jesus today?" And nobody raised their hand. And I said, "I saw him all day long." And the reason I saw him all day long, was simply because I was looking for him all day long. If you're not looking for him, you're not going to find him. It's like the burglar never finding a cop because he's not looking for a cop. Right? Yep. So you have to understand that hope is based on these things and all of these things. And this is the beauty of it. You have a choice. You have a choice to live in a spiritual attitude or a carnal attitude. In the same way, Adam and Eve had a choice of obedience or disobedience. And basically, they're the same, aren't they? They're basically the same. Obedience, stay in the word. Obedience. What is Colossians 1:13? Go to Colossians 1:13. God wants you guys to hear this for some reason. Colossians 1:13. No, that's not it. That's not it. Three. I just saw it. In all things, give glory to Jesus Christ. Right, it's in Colossians. I think it's in Colossians. No, it's not that. It's in all things, whatever you do, here it is. Colossians chapter 3, verse 23. Colossians 3:23. Now, I want to just show you something in this verse. God, the Holy Spirit opened this up to me not too long ago. But it says, and whatever you do, and by the way, whatever you do, do it. I looked it up. It's done in the imperative sense. That means it's a command, okay? It says, whatever you do, angel, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Whatever you do. Now, how can, and, oh, and that's, in that, and is that, yeah. Go ahead and read it.
Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ.
That's all true, but I found it. 17. Wink, read Colossians 3:17. This is the one.
And whatever you do, in word or in deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.
How can you do everything? Do all things without exception. How can you do anything and not have God in that, see God in it? If he's saying do all things, what does it say? Do all things in word or deed. In word or deed. Doesn't that mean put God in every equation?
Shows you how often we sin.
You can't believe it. Yeah. That's a commandment. Yeah. That is not a suggestion. That is not just some good sage advice. That is a commandment and has the same strength as I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other God before me. So my point to you is, in telling you all of this about hope and expectation of hope and understanding the idea that you have a choice to live in that trust, that hope slash trust, to live in that or not. And you have to ask yourself, and if you're not doing this, you have to ask yourself, why am I not doing this? Why? How often is your default spiritual, and how often do you take Colossians 3:17 and obey it? In other words, if Wink went to work tomorrow and he goes to work and he sees something that catches his eye, well, Lord, thank you for that. Or if he gets to work and he's having a bad day, Lord, you know what? I need some strength right now. I need your strength. I've had it with this, but I need your strength. All he's doing is he's doing what God told him, commanded him to do. He's using God in his life every day. And that's really what we're called to do. And I have to ask another question. If you're truly saved, why would you not want to do that? Why would you want to live in the flesh more than you live in the spirit? That's a rhetorical question. That's a question that you have to ask yourself. I was talking to somebody this morning, and I said, I'm at the point in my life now where all I want to do is I want to do things for God. Why? Because I'm running out of runway, and I'm going to be home before I know it, and I'll only have one shot at this. So to me, Colossians 3:17 just backs up everything that I'm telling you and teaching you and preaching to you about, is to put God in every equation. Because when you do that, you're obeying that commandment, and your life gets sweeter. Doesn't mean you're not going to cry.
You do that, though, automatically. When you're saved, you really do it, not all the time, but you'll catch yourself.
Yes. Well, no, because I've talked to a lot of people, and that's not necessarily true. There are people that go long periods of time, they're saved, but they go long periods of time lamenting. That's why God says that there's a, that despise not the chastening of you.
The Lord, yeah.
That's why he does it. Wink's right. Many Christians live in that spiritual mode, and every so often they flip off into the carnal mode. But there are, and how do you know where you are with that?
And it's the little foxes that spoil the vine.
Yeah, but how do you know where you are if you're not taking account? How many people here don't reconcile their checkbook? What would happen if you just don't keep reconciling your checkbook? You're writing checks. Well, I don't know what I got. Oh, a little over, right? A little under, right? You need to reconcile your spiritual life and take an account of it. Because that tells you where you are in your relationship, and it tells you what you might need to do to make it either sweeter or to correct it. Because it's all about the relationship. Don't we do that with each other? Husbands and wives do that all the time, right? You do. You adjust. And it's not always easy to do, but you do it. Why? Because of love. And that's what I'm talking about. If you love God, you know God, you love God, and you want to serve God, then you need to take an account of your relationship with him a lot to see where you are.
Pam's laid up with her foot. I never realized how many little things she does.
Oh, yeah.
Now I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, could you get this?
You have to do them.
You know?
Yeah, I do. See that? And I hate to.
I'll tell you, she's a gem. I mean, I
appreciate her.
Well, I was doing a lot by doing the lawn, you know, and checking the oil and vehicles, and you know. I said, man, I told her, I said, I had no idea.
Now, see, that's a perfect example. What he just said is a perfect example. Here's why. Because as I understand the story, she stepped on some glass, they took it out, but they missed a piece. So they found some more. So they cut it out, and that put her on, she can't stand on her feet. So that put Wink up to bat. So in a sense, what Wink is learning something about somebody that he loves. And at the same time, he's learning what his shortcomings were by not doing some of that stuff before.
I call them longcomings.
Yeah. And not spelled with a L-A-W-N, right? Okay, so you guys understand that? Everybody understand that? Take an account of your relationship with God. Figure out how it's going. Think about how it's going. Think about where you want it to go. And then adjust your life to it. If you're not doing that, you're just plugging along. You're a nominal Christian. You'll go to heaven. You'll be joiners with Christ. You'll be happy. But there has to be something else that we don't know about. The Bible doesn't talk about it. He simply says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." He doesn't say about the other people. He just says about the ones that do a good job for him. And that's the only thing you should want to hear. You shouldn't want to hear anything else. You know why? Because there's no reason to hear anything else. You have everything you need to have him say that to you. He's given you so many talents. He's given you so much faith. He's given you so much time. He's given you even bad health. You can still bear fruit for Christ. If nothing else, by just your faith and hope in him. And the word, right? Okay. Hopes in all things, number 3, produces endurance and perseverance through hardships. Romans 5:35.
5:3-5.
What is it? Oh, I didn't have my glasses on. Hebrews, thank you for correcting me. We did?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's move on. How about Hebrews 6:19?
We did that too.
All right. Number 4. So. We did that?
No.
Okay. It's also trusting in God. It's also talking about hope. It's also trusting in God for everything. It's Romans 8:28. How do we trust in God with Romans 8:28? First of all, you guys, I do pray that all of you do know Romans 8:28. That should be imprinted on the back of your eyelids, right? All right, so how does that work? How does that work? Trusting in God for everything, Romans 8, 28. How does that work? Wendy, how does it work?
It doesn't matter what he has for you.
Thank you.
That's the plan.
That's it.
That's the sovereignty.
So, why is it so difficult for us to think about that when things happen?
Shows you when we don't believe it.
When I'll give you a perfect
example. Never complain about anything. Never complain. You just stepped away from that. If that's true.
It's unbelief.
Shows you how much.
See, you just God's using Wink this morning because when he said that, something went through my mind. You know what you need to do? Think of your conversations. When you have conversations with other people, think about when somebody says, you know, I couldn't believe this car did this and that, and I had to go another way, this, that, and the other thing. Ask yourself, or ask that person, where was God in that equation? Where was he? See, when you start asking that, when you start thinking about God in everything you do, then Romans 8, 28 works out perfectly. If you don't do it, what's the first thing that happens when you open up your mail and it says Internal Revenue Service, you're up for an audit? I don't see Romans 8, 28 now. Right? Right? But the fact of the matter is, he's still 8:28 is still there. And then you read down lower and it says, yeah, we want to go back. We think we owe you some money. Do you understand? 8:28 should always be there. Always be there. No matter what it is. When somebody says something, I was going, a friend will be talking to you and they'll say this happened and that happened. And if they're, even if, and especially if they're not saved, say, well, where was God in that equation? What are you talking about? I don't know God like that. Well, you should. He's in everything. He's God. That's what God is. He's supreme over all things. So that car that hit you wasn't luck, chance, or coincidence. So what are you going to take out of it besides a body shop?
God caused the accident.
What are you going to take out of it? If you don't put God into it and say, well, something good's going to happen out of this, what are you going to take? There's nothing good. All it's going to do is cost you a deductible.
You never know what danger he prevented you from running into.
And you don't even know that as well.
But now I'm going to play. You would have been dead if you were on schedule.
I can tell you, being in the service, we lost three guys on ship. We were crossing the North Atlantic in a storm, and every 3 or 4 minutes over a ship's loudspeaker, you probably know this, right? They would say, all hands, stay off the sponson decks. I forget exactly how they worded it, but it was a warning not to go outside the ship, to stay inside. Don't go out on the railing, if you will. That's what a sponson deck is, right? We lost three guys. They said, oh, the water. So, and it was. The water, you've never seen color like that in the water. And on an aircraft carrier, I think it was 100,000 pounds, we had 5,000 men, and the waves were so big in the mid-Atlantic, we would go down like this, and when you go down so low, and before you came up, if you looked out the side, all you saw was water. There was no horizon.
Oh, yeah.
That's how deep they were, right? So the point I'm trying to make by telling you that is, I forgot. But anyway, Romans 8:28. See, if you have Romans 8:28, whether you're in swells that sink an aircraft carrier, or it's just a bruised toe, whatever it is, if you don't give God the credit for it, you're taking it yourself. You're dishonoring him. Everything in your life was meticulously put there from the day you were born, your parents, the geography of where you would be born, every breath you take, every heartbeat you take, every tear. Bible says he collects our tears. Our names are tattooed on his hand. All that is a metaphor to let us know how much he loves us. So we should return that by putting him in everything we do. And Romans 8:28 says no matter what it is, I love you so much, it's going to work out for your good. That's really how Romans 8:28 should work. I don't care what it is, Linda. I don't care how bad it is. I don't care how bad it hurts. And I could just say it this way. There's not one thing that we could ever, a human being could ever feel as far as pain and discouragement and anything else that was negative than our Lord Jesus Christ did when he took my sins up on that cross. Nothing in this world could hurt more than that. But his father's wrath, his father turned away from him first time, and all the wrath for my sins. So what's gonna so if I got a boo-boo, or I got a bad day, or I got an IRS letter, or I got this, or I got that, what is that compared to what he did? And why did he do it? Because he loved Lou. That's why he did it. That's why he saved Lou. He loved him. You understand that? We don't look at love the way we should. We look at love like, oh yeah, I love you, but you know what? Maybe not tomorrow. God has never, never stopped loving all of those that he's elected out of this world in every generation. He's never stopped loving us. So take that home. That's a good application to take home.
And he didn't love us because of anything else.
Yeah, let's don't forget that. Yeah.
I just have a curiosity. As we go through life, and there's all these adversities, as you say that God guides our hand in everything, and he has a hand in every single thing that happens in our life.
He's not making you sin. He's not the author of sin. He's not making us sin.
No.
Okay,
I'm not saying that. What I am saying is he is the director of our lives, and I kind of, the curiosity is if he does that for each and every one of us so that we have an opportunity to practice being in the Spirit and walking as he would walk. And that's a really difficult task, as we all know.
To what?
As far as, you know.
What is difficult?
It's difficult to be there every day unless you're in his word every day, every minute of the day, every hour of the day.
That's not true.
Well, I mean,
I'll tell you the reason why. Do you have a verse that you keep in your head?
Yeah, 8:28.
Okay, so is that not God?
Well, yeah, of course it is.
So do you take him with you? Yeah. So the only choice you're making is to use 8:28 or not.
Okay, so it is about the choice.
It's all a choice.
And I'll share an experience, because I was sharing it earlier that, you know, it's just so amazing to me, and unbelievable, you know, it blows my mind that we can walk in his Spirit 1 second, and then just another second after, we're right into a carnal, ready to take somebody's head off, take them out, and that's being the honest, that's being honest. I don't think or believe that. Let's just say I'm still a work in progress, because I don't know whether
I can help you with that. Yeah. You know who the Hulk was?
Yeah.
It was a professor, and when he got angry, he turned into the Hulk, right? So he's on an aircraft in one of the movies. He's on the aircraft with another one of the superheroes, right? And so the superhero goes up to the professor, who is the Hulk, and he says, How is it you keep yourself from being mad all the time? And the professor looked at him and says, how do you know I'm not mad all the time? He's controlling it. See, the same thing what you said is true. If you think that you're in the Spirit, if you're in the Spirit, and then a second later you're out of the Spirit because something happens, you're really not in the Spirit, because you're waiting for it to happen. In other words, you're looking at life through a cloud of spirituality, Romans 8:28. But as soon as something happens, oh, what happened? And when you do that, you're really not in the Spirit. You're just acquainted with him. Because if you were truly in the Spirit, you would be saying before that thing happened, you say, Lord, thank you for 8:28. Oh, my car just died.
Yeah, you're not talking about him being on.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about him and me and you and everybody in this room being in a spiritual mode partially, not fully. If you're in a full, and even then sometimes, not often, but sometimes things are so bad, something happens that's so unusual or difficult that you'll snap into that carnal mode. But generally speaking, you have the ability to stay in the Spirit and walk in that Spirit you have the choice to do that most of the day. I'll say that. None of us are, it's not like you're in Ukraine and you're dodging drones and bullets. You know, you're not doing that. You don't have that kind of stress. So we have that ability to do it. All we have to do is want to do it. And I can't tell you this, I don't know why, but human beings, believing Christians, somehow still have, I have it, I don't understand it, a relish to do something or to just get out of the center of God's path and wander over somewhere and say, well, what about that? I don't know why I do it. I can only tell you, Paul talks about that in Romans 7. He says, the things that I want to do, I don't do, and the things that I do, I don't want to do. So it doesn't say how often it happens, this, that, or the other. But if you look at Galatians 2:20, it says, I've been crucified with Christ. It is not I who live, but him who lives in me, who gave his life for me, who loved me and gave his life for me, right? What he's saying with that is, it's not me who's living. It's Christ living in me, and every day I want to live for him. And that's the difference between a knowledge of walking in the Spirit and actually keeping that spiritual attitude forefront in your mind as you go through your day, no matter what the problem is.
It's the problems,
yeah,
that make you aware of that.
Yeah. Even, you know, I pray for travel mercies, you know, anywhere I go, the grocery store or whatever. And I, the old Linda, if they get in the traffic and somebody's doing something that is just like, come on, you know? I find myself, instead of getting in that mode where I want to get out and choke the person in front of me or whatever, I'm praying again, give me the patience that I need to get through this traffic or behind a school bus or,
yeah,
exactly. You know, any of that. You have to pray again. Just because you prayed for travel mercy doesn't mean you're not going to run into something along the way that you don't like.
You're right.
And you have to bring God back into the equation of it.
Exactly.
Even as me, even going into a Walmart or a grocery store or whatever,
same thing.
I get anxiety when I'm in stores. Because that was, I mean, I'm talking many years ago, that when I had my first anxiety attack was in a Kmart after.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll get
flashbacks.
Get flashbacks, and I have to pray again. I mean, sometimes it's constant, you know, and you just never know what's going to come. Even though you pray before you leave your home, you still don't. You're still going to run into something.
You will.
Yeah.
But you know what it is? You have. I'm not saying, and I know Wink agrees with this. I'm not saying we do it all the time.
No.
But what I'm saying is, we should examine ourselves and see how often we're in it. Like, I know a lot of people have road rage problems. I had people road rage, but I never had road rage. It didn't matter where the people was. For me anyway, right? But it's the same principle.
Rage.
Yeah, it was just like I was the Hulk. I was always angry about something, right? That's terrible. Well, you're my brothers and sisters, so what? So anyway, I think that you make the point very well, that by understanding your what you're doing with the traffic and controlling it, and the way you do it. Here's the secret. If when I go home, if all of you are still here, remember this one thing. A pastor just couldn't get out of his mind. Get out of your comfort zone. Get out of your comfort zone. Every day, do one, two, or three things that you don't want to do. And what's going to happen is you're going to get in traffic. It's going to be really stupid, and you're going to laugh. You're going to say, wow, where'd that go? Get out of your comfort zone. Get out of your comfort zone and care, but I don't care. I care because it's happening, but I don't care because God's in charge of it. Those are the two main themes in my life. Remember that. And you only need to know it now, because when you get to heaven, you won't have traffic. You won't have road rage. Yeah.
I would say anybody that wants to practice that, go to Torrington, because there's detours everywhere.
Good point, Jer. Good point. All right, we'll stop here at, where were we? Romans 8:28, number 4.